Hello, my soul-seeking friends. It's Shanna. Thank you so much for listening to Sense of Soul podcast, enlightening conversations with like-minded souls from around the world, sharing their journey of finding their light within, turning pain into purpose, and awakening to their true sense of soul. If you like what you hear, show me some love and rate, like, and subscribe. And consider becoming a Sense of Soul Patreon member, where you will get ad-free episodes, monthly circles, and much more. Now go grab your coffee, open your mind, heart, and soul. It's time to awaken. Today on Sense of Soul, I have a special guest, Dr. Anna Jaya Judith. She has been called a prophet for our time, a groundbreaking thought leader who is the founder and director of Sacred Centers. She is a writer, a therapist, and a spiritual teacher. Her passion for the realization of human potential matches her concern for humanity's impending crises. Her fervent wish is that we wake up in time. Anna Jaya is considered one of the country's foremost experts of the chakra system. She is an international best-selling author. She has written a dozen books, and her last book is called Goddess, Blessed Reunions with a Feminine Face of the Divine. And it's an honor for me to bring this conversation to you today on this very special day of the 2024 eclipse, where in this episode, Anna Jaya shares her experience of a total eclipse back in 1979. You're in for lots of wisdom today from this episode. So please welcome Anna Jaya Judith.
Hello.
Hi, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I am wonderful. I'm so very glad to have you.
Thank you. Where are you speaking from?
I'm in Colorado. How about you?
Bay Area, San Francisco.
Okay. How's your weather?
Been just bursting with spring, and we've had a lot of rain this year.
It's so amazing how spring equinox hits, and
there it is. I know.
Thank you so very much for being with me. It is such an honor. You know, I was just telling you prior that your book, Wheels of Life, is one of the most recommended books that I recommend. I always say to my students, the Bible when it comes to chakras. So thank you so much for all the work that you did on that book and the other books. And super excited to hear about Goddess and talk about that with you today.
Thank you. Delighted to be on.
Yes. How did you get into this?
Really, in 1975, I kind of found my way to the Goddess, and it was like finding my way home. Shortly thereafter, I got rid of everything I owned except for a four-wheel drive Jeep, and I moved off the grid to the top of the mountain and lived alone for a couple months. By that time, I had discovered a whole community of people was like a neo-pagan church that worshiped the Goddess, and I had already kind of discovered that and was holding ceremonies on top of the mountain with women. But then I discovered men were into it too. And in 1985, I was ordained as a priestess in that community called the Church of All Worlds. And I served as high priestess and president of the organization for a decade and was very involved with it, lived off the grid on the ceremonial land. And we held, you know, rituals and celebrations and classes and workshops and work parties and all sorts of things for a number of years. But I really couldn't sustain myself living off the grid. You know, I needed to be back in civilization. So I came back in the early 80s, back into civilization, went back to graduate school, got my master's and my PhD, and then started teaching my chakra stuff all over the world. The rest is history. But something has come full cycle around in the fact that I was asked to write this Goddess book. I didn't go searching for it. And I had found a part of a manuscript I had written way back in that time when I was ordained on the Goddess. That was in the 80s, so it was a long time ago. And I thought, I wonder if you'll ever do anything with this. And I put it back on the shelf. And then a couple of weeks later, I was in a Zoom breakout session, my Evolutionary Leaders Council. And I ran into the publisher, and when I introduced myself and said what I had done, I just published these set of cards called She Rises on Women's Archetypes of Leadership. And she had heard of that, and she asked me to write a book on the Goddess. And I thought, well, this came to me. The Goddess is behind it, so I'm going to say yes.
Oh my gosh, I had no idea. I love this. I love to hear the background of how people have been introduced to the goddess, because myself, it was so hard for me to wrap my head around that, being so deeply rooted Catholic. So the only divine mother was Mary. And of course, I thought Mary Magdalene was a prostitute most of my life until I awakened and did research.
That's right. Yeah. And, you know, this is true for most of the world. The goddess has been so suppressed and so systematically all but destroyed over centuries, over millennia, really. God was a he, and that was the way it was. And not even knowing there had ever been goddesses until ninth grade, when I was taking an ancient history class and we read Edith Hamilton's mythology. And it was all about the gods and goddesses of ancient Greece. And I was like a mind blower for me, because I realized, oh, the story I've been told is not the whole story. And then I began to research, what did people used to worship? What were the various phases of religion as humanity progresses through its evolution? And what happened to her? And yeah. I think what happened to her is largely responsible for where we are now in the world, with ecological crises and health crises and you know, lack of the sacred.
Yeah. Sometimes I feel like it's a real, true, intentional conspiracy to keep the goddesses kind of in the back, and also make them out to be oftentimes the dark mother.
That's right. Yeah. Yeah. Even what we consider crone. And in my book, I talk about maid, mother, crone, and queen. The crone, most of the stories about her, we have to see through the lens of patriarchy, that she was already kind of banished from civilization. And in that rejection, you know, was projected on as being an old hag or being an evil witch or, you know, something. And that wasn't really what the older woman, the wise woman was. She was a vessel of wisdom and intelligence and power.
Yeah, I looked up the word crone, and it actually says old hag in the dictionary. And that's right. It hit my heart, because I thought about the wise older women in my life, like my grandmothers, who were so special and brought so much wisdom.
Yes, that's right. Yeah. Yeah. And having lived a long time, that is, we slow down. We're not so beautiful anymore. We're not fertile anymore. But what we have is wisdom and magic.
So you have Queen in there. Tell me about Queen.
In the old days, maiden, mother, crone described the three phases of a woman's life. Mm-hmm. Most women did have children, and they had many children. So if they started when they were young and they had children for two decades, you know, and raised 8 to 10 children or whatever, by the time they were in their 60s, they were wiped out.
Right.
And didn't have that much. And, you know, it was a different world. But today's world, women are having fewer children, or they're not having children at all, and they are going into the workplace and they're having careers, and they're, you know, as they gain in power in those careers, what they do is use it to serve humanity. And that's the role of the queen. So there's more and more women stepping into the role of queen. However, there's many goddesses that were referred to as queens, like Inanna was the queen of heaven and earth. Isis was the queen of the gods. Mm-hmm. So there's many that were referred to as queens.
You know, I have children from 26 to 11. So I feel like I'm in this long, very long mother phase. And you know, the triple goddess has really helped me understand that I can tap into my maiden self and be very playful, or I could be in the, you know, in the mother role, but I've not embraced the queen, which I think I might. But, you know, I am moving into my crone. I'm moving into, you know, menopause. I let my hair go. This is all natural. I'm letting it go gray. You know, a lot of people have resistance to age. The triple goddess has really helped me embrace age and the process of transition.
Yeah, and have it something to be proud of. You know, when I'm writing the book, sometimes it's maiden, mother, and wise woman. Wise woman is a little more respectful. And crone, like you say, you look it up in the dictionary and it says old hag. But I wanted to reclaim the word crone as something to be proud of. And some say the word comes from the word for crown. You know, that she was, I looked up in an etymology dictionary and it didn't quite hold up, but I have heard that. So some say the crone is the queen, you know?
Yeah. You look at mythology, there's all of these archetypes. And it's so interesting to say, like, this guy is definitely this guy. This girl, it has the same attributes and characteristics as this one. And I found that a lot with the goddesses.
You mean across cultures? So, like,
yes, across cultures.
Goddess of love and the, yeah, and the Celts have a goddess of love. Yes. Well, you know, the goddesses and the gods, you know, when we were polytheistic, they represented major aspects of human experience, you know? So, yeah, a love goddess is very common, you know, a goddess of the spring, a maiden or mother or a crone. You know, we have crone goddesses in all cultures. We have the healer goddesses. We have the goddesses of compassion. So, yeah, there are similarities and each one has a little different flavor.
Yeah, I know. And, you know, for some reason, I feel like I grew up thinking I could only be like this type of woman. So I'm looking at the younger millennials and the Gen Z, and they're all the things. And I'm like, yeah, this is awesome. I'm learning from them. And I'm at the first point in my life where I get to have something other than raising children. And I'm starting to see that all of those characteristics, like when you look at a lot of the goddesses, not only are they loving and fertile, but they're also, you know, skillful, mm-hmm. and they're alchemists, and, you know, they have all these other characteristics.
Yes. Well, you know, I created She Rises, the set of 38 archetype cards, different aspects of women's leadership. Some, I'll just pick this one at random, the Oracle. You know, the oracles in ancient Greece were the most respected members of society. Kings and statesmen and people traveled hundreds of miles, which wasn't easy in those days, to consult with the oracle. Wars were started or ended according to what the oracle spoke. And the oracle place at Delphi was this beautiful hillside temple with a huge stadium and lined with statues and art and temples. And, you know, it was quite the spiritual center of the ancient world going back as far as 14,000 BC. So, you know, some of these archetypes and the information is all written on the card itself. So you don't have to have a little book. You can carry a card around with you. And it's written from the point of view of I, she, and you. So I is the oracle speaking. I mean, I could read some of it if you wanted. She tells you all about the historical aspect. And then you is when you work with this archetype, it's asking mm-hmm. you to seek wisdom from higher guidance, take time from your life to go on a vision quest in the mountains, or perhaps deep meditation retreat and see what the goddess has to tell you. But each one speaks from the I. And I mean, I could read one, and then that's an evocation.
Please do.
Yeah. Okay. I am the oracle. I am the voice of truth, the mouthpiece of the gods. I do not belong to myself, but to those I serve. I am priestess to Apollo, to Rhea, to Gaia. I am the prophetess at the oracle of Delphi, the Akashwani of India, whose voice is the sky. I am the Babalaus of the Yoruba. I am the voice of the divine. Do not seek me unless you are willing to hear the truth. Do not take my words if you are not willing to abide by them. Do not implore my guidance if you know not what you are seeking. For I am the gateway to wisdom, the voice of truth rattling within your soul. My answers are already written within you. I am the oracle. I know your future. Consult me if you dare. I am the gateway to your destiny.
I felt so much Sophia in that.
Yes.
Red.
Goddess of wisdom.
Amazing. All right. Well, those cards are my to-do list immediately after we get off of this.
They're not out in bookstores. You can only get them from my website, SheRisesMovement.com. But you can, they're not even on Amazon.
Really? Okay. Well, that makes them even more special. You know, I feel like it was such a journey for me, and I thought I was alone. And then I started to talk to other women like yourself who had the goddess come into their life. And it seems like this is happening collectively a lot, even to men.
Even to men, yes. There's only one man who has a story in my book, which is Goddess. This just came out a couple days ago. The middle section is stories written by various people of their personal encounters with the goddess. Oh. And there's one by Oberon Zell of his encounter with the goddess that just transformed his life. And he became one of the founders of the neo-pagan community and the goddess revival. So yes, it's definitely something that men come to as well. And here's what I think about it. You know, in the 60s, we had the first wave of feminism, first modern wave of feminism. Of course, you know, the suffragettes with the right to vote 100 years ago and all that. But, you know, that was women's liberation. And we were trying to get liberated from being stuck at home and stuck in the kitchen. And we wanted to go out into the workplace and make our own money and have more sovereignty over our lives. So that was a wave where women were going into the workplace, but we were going into a male world where we had to become more like men in order to succeed. And, you know, that wave kind of peaked and, you know, there's still a long way to go for women to have equality in the workplace and make as much as men do. But, you know, that's not what this wave is about. Now there were a lot of books written on the goddess back then too, as she was discovered. But this wave, I believe, is more about bringing feminine values into the conversation of how we create our world. And that's conversation among politicians, conversation among business people, among healthcare workers, in education, that the ways of the feminine, love, compassion, connection, collaboration, you know, listening, it's not competition. It's not trying to be the one on top, leading from the front with a, you know, ironclad rule. It is women lead differently. That's why I did that deck, because women lead differently than men and they need different archetypes to guide them. So I think this bringing the goddess back and all that she stands for is bringing her back into collective consciousness, because along with the suppression of the goddess was everything that she was connected with, the earth and the body and joy and celebration and color and sexuality and the celebration of life, that the divine is in everything. I'm looking out my window right now at the leaves, you know, opening up. I can almost watch them grow right now. It's just spring is springing forth. The divine is in everything, not abstractly out there, transcendent, that we embody it. And men do too. And so when we bring that back, it's liberation for everybody, because it's what's been suppressed. You know, when you're told you can't have something that is innate and natural, you know, and you just accept it. But then one day, you know, maybe you do therapy, maybe you're at a workshop, maybe you have an insight, you realize, oh, I can have this. It's a restoration of what's natural. And we come back to our wholeness. And most people, you know, that come to this say it feels like coming home.
Oh, my God. So in June, I was in this beautiful Sophia Circle, Diana Kelly. She was leading this beautiful, at the end, a prayer, you know, to Sophia. And I opened myself up to receive. And I'm not one who channels energy and like on call, but this was definitely something that was dropped right into my brain. And it said, I belong to no one and I am home to all. And it wasn't like nobody, it was no one.
Mm-hmm. No one. Yes. That's the old definition of a virgin. A virgin was not a woman who had never had sex, had nothing to do with sex. It had to do with the fact that she was not yet promised in marriage or married. So she didn't belong to someone and she hadn't had a child yet. So it was a childless woman, and you could be a virgin lifelong, but it wasn't about sex. So even the Virgin Mary, I mean, how are you going to have a child without having sex? You know, that's kind of a ridiculous myth. The Virgin Mary was a strong priestess woman who gave birth to Jesus. So, you know, but that part was lost.
And there's so many goddesses who were virgin as well.
Yeah.
And so now I will forever not see it the same, but see it as she was one. Like, have you ever heard of the story of Noreia?
Aurea. No, I don't believe I have.
One of Adam and Eve's daughters. And she refused to lay beneath someone. And you know, I think the story is she goes on to marry Noah. So when I heard her, when I hear any of the stories of the unknown, you know, feminine, they're always strong.
Yes.
They're always strong. And that, like Lilith.
It sounds like Lilith, because it was said Lilith would submit to the will of Adam. And so she was banished and made into this horrible thing that ate children, and which was not the case. Yeah.
Or like the Dark Mother. And I believe I saw something about Rajashri Ma in your book. I adore her, and she's been someone that I could lean on.
Rajashri Ma has a story in my book.
Oh, she does? I love her so much. Her and I still, we keep in contact. Mixing that feminine with the Reiki, you know, because I told you I'm a Reiki teacher.
That's right.
The feminine started to come into my teaching very naturally. And I always feel like I don't want to go against tradition, but I'm like, there's so many things about tradition that hasn't evolved with humanity.
That's right. That's right. And most of what we call tradition is patriarchal tradition, because all the ancient goddess traditions were just completely wiped out. I mean, we've lost so much of the literature. We lost the art. We don't know really what they did. And sometimes people who are practicing this religion say it's a religion we're remembering and inventing together, you know, because we can remember it from past lives. There's something deeply familiar, like sitting around a fire, you know. Humans have been sitting around a fire for, you know, since the beginning of time. There's something very ancient you tap into when you sit around a fire. So there's a remembrance, and yet we don't really know. So we have to invent the rituals from that remembrance.
Wow, I so feel that way. And I've experienced that, you know, even with when I think about, you know, actually you were saying something about nature, and you could sit in the nature and you could feel, you know, Mother Earth as she's birthing spring. Even when I think about like the eclipse coming up, you know, you think about this unification. That's what I feel. Everyone fears like something crazy is going to happen. And maybe it is crazy that all of a sudden both masculine and feminine become sacred as one.
Yeah. And I have a story in the book. It starts out the story section of an eclipse I went to in 1979 up in actually Maryhill, Washington, where there's a full-size facsimile of Stonehenge, as if Stonehenge had never been knocked down. And it's made of cement. And the guy built it there because there had been an eclipse there in, I think, 1909, and he knew there would be another one in 1979. So it was a place where two eclipse paths crossed. And of course, it was in February 26th. So up in the Pacific Northwest, it does nothing but rain that time of year. And I live in the San Francisco Bay Area, and everyone said, oh, don't go up there. You won't see anything. It's just pouring rain. You'll drive all that way for nothing. And we said, we're going to clear the skies. And bounced it to the local museum, and it was just pouring rain. And the eclipse was at about 8:15 in the morning, and we did our chants and our prayers, and we had, and Walter Cronkite, CBS News, that was, he was a new big news anchor then. You know, they were there with their cameras, and we had a big goddess statue, and we had somebody playing the sun, and the moon went in front of the sun and eclipsed it. And we said this was the dawning of the return of the goddess. And for the eclipse, the skies opened like a camera lens. We saw a full view 15 minutes after, closed back up and poured rain again. And there were only two places in the whole Pacific Northwest that could see it. It was us and a nearby Indian reservation. Even the scientific observatory did not get a clear view. But we saw it so clearly, you could see the stars. And so it was. And then on the news that night, they showed us with our ritual and carrying the big goddess statue around the Stonehenge, and all the people in their costumes and chanting. There were 3,000 people there. And the news anchor actually said it must have been magic.
Wow.
And it was.
I love that. Will you go and see the eclipse?
You know, I was going to. My partner is an astronomer and he loves that kind of thing. We went to the one in Oregon a few years ago. And from here, it's 3 days of driving each way, and to go like to San Antonio or Mexico. And you know, 6 days of driving for 4 minutes of eclipse just doesn't seem, you know, justifiable with climate change and time-wise and all that. So we have decided not to.
Yeah. Yeah. What do you feel like that represents?
The feminine was going to come in front of the masculine for a short period of time. So it was going to be in its ascendancy. And what happens is a moment of incredible beauty. And we are rare in the cosmos, at least of the planets that we know, that our moon is the perfect size to totally eclipse the sun and see that little, I mean, if it was bigger, we wouldn't see the...
Yeah, talk about magic.
Talk about magic, yeah. And when the eclipse is just leaving, it's sort of like this moon here, there's that diamond ring effect. That's the union of masculine and feminine. So when you give the feminine her place, and I don't mean the place patriarchy's put us in, but honored, sacred place, then we have a partnership of masculine and feminine that we can really do something with.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because when you're out of balance, it just doesn't work.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And the goddess is wholly different. She's not, you know, Jehovah in a skirt. She's not, you know, the god in drag. She's not, you know, lipstick on Zeus. You know, she's a wholly different energy and entity and really represents a whole different set of values. There's a whole different lore and magic and ritual and belief system and value system that goes with it.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, oh my goddess. So you got to tell me about your book full of stories of women and men finding the divine goddess.
Oh, that's the middle section of the book. The first section is the theory that is about maiden, mother, crone, and queen. And I have four different mythological stories for each one of those aspects. And I also talk about the history, like when we worship the great mother. And so I start with that. Everything starts with the mother. And then I go to the crone, which tells the story of the loss of the goddess. Then I go to the maiden, which tells about her rebirth, and then I go to the queen. So that's the first section. The second section is stories by various people, and they're short stories. You know, you can just read it, you know, when you're having a cup of tea or something. And then the third section is practices to come back home to the goddess and bring her back home to the earth.
I love that because that's kind of like what I've been thinking about over the past years. Like, okay, this is wonderful that I've received all of this knowledge on the goddess, but how do we use it in our lives today?
Right, right. Well, you know, the goddess, ritual is a spiritual language. And even ritual has been given a bad name by patriarchs. Yes. You know, like, oh, you're worshiping a devil or something. No, ritual is entering into a realm of the sacred where the macrocosmos is symbolized by something micro, you know, like if you want to do a ritual to bring two people closer together, you have two candles representing them and you move the candles closer together. Very simple act of symbolizing something larger. But there were rituals celebrating the cycle of the seasons, rituals celebrating birth and marriage and death and, you know, all the major aspects of life. And so it's coming back into a sense of the sacred and the creative. How do we symbolize that it's spring right now and the celebration of spring and the evenness of the day and the night on spring equinox and the light and the dark and the light is growing now out of the winter's darkness and it's a time of rebirth? How do we symbolize all that so we're aligned with these cycles of nature?
Gone are the days of the Father, Son, and Holy Ghost.
That's right. That's right. I mean, how ridiculous. The Trinity would be the Mother, Father, and the Divine Child.
And how can you have a holy family without a mother?
Exactly. Exactly. How can we birth a new world without the feminine?
And I mean, I think that as I begin to learn this, it really like kind of, it did. It was that divine spark within me, that feminine energy that was like started to flame up in me. And I did. I felt like I was reclaiming my own power as I learned about them. And that's why I wanted to share with everybody and have beautiful women on like you talking about this. And I'll tell you, at the beginning of my journey, I had more men talking about this. about the goddesses, because it was really only truly the scholars who had done research. But I'm like, why am I only are men talking about goddesses?
At the beginning, most of the books on the goddess were by men.
Yes.
James Millart, the archaeologist that was unearthing the goddess. It was Robert Graves and the White Goddess. It was, various men.
Yeah.
Doing most of the book writing then.
Yeah, true. I know. And you know who I loved and I really connected with was Helena Petrovna Blavatsky.
Yes.
In my journey. I was like, what a woman.
Yeah, what a power.
You know, people were like, ooh, beware, she's dark. And I'm like, yeah, whatever. That's what you say about all the goddesses.
That's right.
She was before her time, for sure. Good
yeah,
Lord.
And for me, it was Dionne Fortune. A time when the goddess was really suppressed, she stood for it. You know,
okay.
It was Dionne Fortune that said, religion without a goddess is halfway to atheism. And we are not playing with a full deck in this world. Because right. The goddess has been so suppressed.
Right.
It's half of creation. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I always foresee the future, you know, if this sticks, because that's the only thing I worry, because I've questioned this. Seems like there were periods where the divine feminine came in and then she trickled off.
Yeah. Well, you mean she tried to come back?
Yes.
Yeah, the Renaissance was one of those periods.
Okay, yeah.
Renaissance began with a rediscovery of some of the classical literature that had been suppressed. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the Dark Ages, after all that happened, was some of the least productive evolutionary periods of humanity. In fact, you could hardly call it evolution because nothing new was created. Nothing, you know, I mean, that just 500 years and humanity didn't move forward very often. And that was after really the loss of the goddess, and all the classical literature had been suppressed, but it was rediscovered during the Renaissance. Mm-hmm. And there was this short resurgence of color and art and celebration and the feminine coming back in. And then it was brutally followed by the Inquisition.
Mm-hmm. So how do we get it to stick and have her stay forever now?
I think that we're living in completely different times. I mean, there was no internet there. You know, you didn't have the ability that we have now to spread something worldwide and make that stick. So I think women have to talk about these things like this conversation that we're having. We have to put the fear people have, oh, you're going to go to the devil or this is not allowed or whatever. We have to put it in its context that was just a story told to scare people. But that fear was very true once when you could get burned at the stake.
Absolutely.
Or having herbs hanging in your kitchen, you know, for attending another sister who is in the throes of childbirth.
Right.
You know, you could get burned at the stake for doing those things. So that fear was very real, but it wasn't grounded in anything. The goddess is not punitive or judgmental. She doesn't, you know, say, I've got apples on my tree, but you have to be good enough to pick them. You know, she just, I have apples on my tree. They're for anybody who comes along,
yeah.
You know, be you beggar or king, you know? So it's not a punitive religion. And that was more something the patriarchy brought in and a way to keep the feminine down.
Yeah. And it's the age of Aquarius.
Yeah, that's right. And so what's going to make it stick? It's inevitable.
Yeah.
It's the flow of evolution.
Right.
And you can't stop that. Just like you can't stop diversity. And the goddess represents diversity. She's not only one form. There's no one true, right, and only way. There's no dogma. There's no literal truth, because literal referred to literary, what was written. And so the goddess predates written language.
Yes.
So there, you know, the literal truth was the truth of the book, right?
Yeah, and the word.
And let me still use that for truth. It is, but the truth is really, if it's written at all, it's written in the sky. It's written in the trees. It's written in the mountains, in the land, in the rivers. I mean, that it's written in our bodies, in biology.
In the Gnostic Gospels, I had put together, Jesus was always considered the Logos or the Word.
Yeah.
And Sophia was the first thought.
Yeah.
And so they took out the thought,
yeah.
Right? And it was just the Word. But now we are free thinkers. Yeah. Right. And connecting that heresy with choice, that like, wow, they really did a good job for thousands of years of, you know.
And the root of the word heresy actually is the word choice.
Choice. Yeah.
Yeah. So heretic was one who chose differently. Yeah.
It's and a shame.
Interesting, you know, when we talk about words, the word atheist was first used in the Roman Empire for the early Christians, because theism is the belief that the divine is within everything. It's within the trees, it's within the flowers, it's within the rain and the clouds and you and me.
Yeah.
That it could be represented by these different aspects. And the early Christians who wanted to believe in one God alone were denying that the divine was in anything around them. And so they were called atheists, against theism, against the divine.
Wow. And I guess that would be also where you would get agnostics against wisdom, against knowledge.
That's right. Gnostic.
Yeah. I mean, gnosis means knowledge.
Yeah. Yeah. And gnosis was not the kind of knowledge you get from Wikipedia, you know?
Right.
Gnosis was a kind of inner knowing. It was the wisdom traditions. It was the mystery schools. It was a mystical knowing of the nature of reality, more than facts and figures.
Yeah. And know thyself.
That's
know
right.
Thyself. Yeah. Amazing. Well, Kanish, you have brought so much wisdom, so much goddess energy to me today. I felt fired up. See, that's what happens though. And really, I love to be empowered by women like you and like Rajashri Ma. And yeah, I appreciate all that you do so very much.
Thank you so much. Well, I do it in service to the goddess. When I was ordained in 1985, I swore my life to serve her, and it's now come full circle.
Tell everybody where they can get your book and also those cards again.
Yeah. So the book's available on Amazon or on my website, sherisesmovement.com. And the cards are only available on my website, sherisesmovement.com. Otherwise, you can look at anadeajudith.com. A lot of my chakra courses and things like that are on that website. I have online self-paced video courses that you can take on various aspects of the chakras and my lifetime work with that and all my other books. This is my 12th book, actually. So
thank you. Thank you for your first book all the way to your last book. Thank you.
Thank you so much. And thank you for listening, everyone. Goddess bless you.
Thank you. You too. Thanks for listening to Sense of Soul podcast. And thanks to our special guests for joining me. If you want more of Sense of Soul, check out my website at www.mysenseofsoul.com, where you can work with me one-on-one or help support Sense of Soul podcast by donating to my coffee fund. Thanks for listening.